Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live at richarddugan.com, and we also stream live at newspress.com. We rebroadcast on A-Z.fm on Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, and if you go to the richarddugan.com radio shows page, you will find the archives of all of the programs that we've done since September of 2007, if you can believe that. So we've been doing this program for quite a long time. I've been interviewing for over 30 years. I think it's going on 34 years probably by now, and enjoying every minute of it, including today's program, and we'll be getting to that in just a moment. Just sort of a little update, if you will, on for those of you who are interested, and for those of you who are not, I apologize. But we're having a lot of fun with our new family member, Angus. Angus Liam McDonough, and he is just a joy to have around. And I was talking with someone when he was only about 12, 13 weeks old, and they said, and I was saying, oh, yeah, we've got sleepless nights and this and that and the other thing, to which they, even though they said it in somewhat of a humorous tone, I think they were a little serious when they said, oh, come on, I hate it when people say that having a dog, a puppy, is like having a child. Well, I've talked with other dog owners who've had puppies and children, and they say it is the same. I haven't had children, so I have nothing to compare it to. All I know is we're having a lot of fun, and he's just learning, very smart, very intelligent, making my dog even smarter and more intelligent as well. So it's a great learning process for all of us. It's quite extraordinary to be a part of this experience. Even though we had a puppy before, we weren't really conscious of the fact that we were raising a puppy because we were there all the time. Now we're working 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. And so, you know, we every day we go home and, okay, well, what's the adventure going to be today? Because it's always different. So I think that if we can start looking at our lives that way a little bit, who knows, maybe we might be able to focus a little bit better on what is important. Well, what is important today is inspiration. Are you getting inspired by the people around you? Are you inspiring the people around you? Well, today we're going to talk with a gentleman who is doing just that on both ends of the spectrum. And his name is Anil Gupta, and he has a website, Anil Gupta Inspires, and he also has a book that'll be coming out shortly. And he is, I guess you might call it his catchphrase or his slogan, is Master You and Master Your Life. Anil, good to have you on the program today. Thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you for having me.
Now, it's very interesting that this year, and I'm not exactly sure why, but the universe must be aligning things in some fashion, that I am dealing with a lot of people on this program as guests who either reside in or are native to or have their roots in India. It's rather extraordinary from my perspective to observe that. It's like, where are all these people coming? And I know there are a lot of people in India, but there are also a lot of people in China, and I'm not hearing from a lot of folks from China. I don't know that that means anything, but I've always been interested in patterns and cycles and rhythms and so forth, and I see this, shall we call it, a rhythm or pattern appearing in this program in 2013. I'd like for you to share with us why you are in what I will call the business of inspiration.
It's really for selfish reasons.
I
used to be. it's really because when I make a difference, I feel so good, and you know that can be construed as selfish. But really, my main aim is to help other people, and it all started by accident. I used to be a doctor of optometry in London. My cousin called me, and he never calls me. He never talks to me. But he had something that I didn't have at that time in my life, was enthusiasm. And I thought, that's strange. That's not like him. And he said, look, why don't you come to a seminar? And I said, what's a seminar? I had no idea what a seminar was. So I said, look, it's just around the corner. Come along. So I did. And I realized this, that there was like a new world out there that I wasn't aware of. So I attended, and then I went on the next course and the next course. And then people would ask me for some advice. And I said, well, why don't you try this? They'd come back and said, oh, Anil, I tried that. It made such a difference. And I thought, wow, that feels good. And it just became addictive. So I just kept on doing it and doing it and doing it. And I just got better and better and better. So, you know, it is self-fulfilling for me. I help other people and I get so much back. And it really does fill me up. As long as I focus on other people and not just do it for my ego, it really does fill me up.
Well, I'm curious as to where you were at the time that your cousin called you. And were you living a fulfilled life? It sounds, I only know of optometrists and ophthalmologists through my own personal having to go to them for my eye conditions. And I know that they do fairly well financially. They do pretty well. And I hear from them from some of their stories of their vacations and I see the cars that they drive and so forth, and their families are pretty nice folks and all of that. And it seems to me like it'd be a pretty good life.
It was. I mean, we lived in central London in South Kensington. I had a busy practice. The kids were in private schools. But I'd lost something. It was that enthusiasm for life. And I was just in that space. I think, you know, what's missing? What am I missing here? I should be happy. I should be fulfilled. I've got everything. But I didn't know what it was.
So you actually did feel there was sort of a vacuum or a hole.
Yeah, I felt we live in the perfect place. I have the perfect job. I have the perfect wife. I have the perfect children. But there was like an emptiness. There's something missing. And I thought, I can't put my finger on it. I should be happy, but I'm not. You know, what is it that I'm missing out on?
So can you share with us what it was that you attended that your cousin invited you to that spurred you off in that direction?
Sure. It was a seminar called Landmark Education.
Okay.
That was the first thing that started me off. Then after that, I just got more and more into it. Then I met a gentleman by the name of Tony Robbins.
Ah.
And he totally, absolutely, totally inspired me. You know, his energy, his vitality, his commitment to help others, the impact he had on so many people. He would have 5,000 or 6,000 people at an event, and they'd be rocking and rolling, and their lives were being transformed. It was an amazing experience, totally amazing.
So, where were you coming from before that? I mean, you've already explained in terms of your life, but in terms of your upbringing, your some people would say your moral or your bearings, if you were, your spiritual bearings. Where were you coming from? What were you raised under, if you will?
Yeah, we were from Indian origin, so we were brought up as Hindus. And Hinduism really isn't a religion. It's a way of life. You can't join to be a Hindu. You just be. So it was really a way of life that we were brought up in. And I was born in Africa, and then we moved to London when I was about 5 years old, and we lived there for about 35 years, and then we moved to Orlando, Florida.
Hmm. So now you live in the States.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you have this wonderful, I don't want to say practice per se, but this opportunity to encourage people, to inspire them. Where do you begin your day when it comes to this? Do you have a routine that you go through? Because I know a lot of folks, artists, like for example, you know, they need a muse, or you know, they find this place where they can go and get inspiration from. Where do you get inspiration from?
Well, everything. I teach one discipline that you have to master. If you master this discipline, you master your life, and that's awareness. So I wake up aware that I'm awake, aware that it's cold this morning, and not complain about it. Say, oh, that's cold. Oh, that's interesting. And then from that awareness, I get clarity on how I'm feeling, what I'm thinking, what I'm doing, what I'm not doing. So it all stems from awareness. I don't have any rituals per se. I just wake up and then see what life throws at me.
Okay. Now, you have a book that's going to be coming out shortly.
Yes, it's called Empower You, Empower Life. The fundamental is you. Wherever you go, your life goes. So you are the common denominator in everything that you do, think, eat.
You know that a lot of us, you know, we're wanting to live those lives of encouragement and inspiration. We want to sort of live free of the suffering and the pain that we've been living with for, well, most of the rest of our early, you know, of our lives prior to this point in time. I'm starting to hear from different corners that it's possible that we don't have to live in those spaces. And yet the world in which we live sort of encourages us to do that. What's your take on the world in which we are living today and how we can achieve something, even a measure of that for, I don't know, I'll take 10, 15 minutes, a day.
But Richard, you already get it. You know, you were talking about Angus.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're with Angus, you're with Angus. And the reason you're so happy with him is because you're serving him. This is why, you know, as children, we feel so loved because we're constantly being served. Then as we grow up, we have to do things to please our parents. So then we have to act, we have to perform. Whereas if you focus on serving other people, if I focus on serving my wife and my children and take away the focus from me, that gives me great peace and enjoyment because I'm making a difference. I'm looking after other people. I'm serving. And that is one of the three pathways to fulfillment. And can I share those with you?
I would love to hear about them. I know our listeners would too.
Okay. So if you do these three things, your life will be filled. First thing, you have to give. G for give. You have to serve others, love others, give your time, your energy, your commitment, even your money. If you serve other people and take the focus away from you, that's part one of reaching fulfillment. When we have babies, that's all we do. We just serve them. We love them, serve them unconditionally. And the focus is taken away from us and passed on to them. The second part of fulfillment is, I just forgot, is to grow.
Okay.
You have to grow. Physically, emotionally, spiritually, and mentally. And this is what happens when you have a puppy. You're growing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to learn new techniques. Your focus is on someone else. And the baby or the puppy is growing. So, you know, work on yourself. Read some books. Increase your spirituality. Eat better food. Breathe better. Work on yourself. On how you process your thoughts, how angry you get, how much awareness you have. And it's practice. It's just practice, practice, practice. But it's just like building a muscle. It just gets stronger and stronger and stronger.
When I have gone through various programs in my early days and wanting to, and it's interesting because I was actually introduced to a series of personal growth and development programs, as I like to refer to them as, and it's the same along the same lines of what you went through too. I remember going there, and this was in my first marriage. I remember going there specifically for the purpose. I was very focused in that respect at the time. I specifically went there for the purpose of assisting my first wife in being able to participate. My first wife was totally blind. And so I was going to be her eyes. You know, I wasn't going to get involved in this program. I wasn't going to participate. Think again, because this is exactly what did happen. And, of course, the next thing I knew, and I don't believe that my first wife had any knowledge of the fact that I didn't really want to be there in the first place, but that was something that was interesting, too, is they spoke about in the workshop, in these intensives, they said that you are right now where you want to be, and if you did not want to be here, you wouldn't be. Now, when I first thought about that, it's like, excuse me, what? You know, but I began to realize that made perfect sense. Wherever you are at this given moment, it's got to be exactly where you wanted to be. Otherwise, you'd be someplace else.
Yeah.
You made, and so the lesson that I've learned from others as well, and I want you to expound on this, is the choices that we have made in the past have placed us where we are. So now the question is, where do we want to be tomorrow?
That really is perfect. You know, we use a statement, you are causing the matter. You know, whatever's happened to you has brought to you to this place right now. The decisions and the indecisions, the inactions of the past has brought you to this place right now. Then let me give you something that's incredibly powerful to share with your listeners. The decisions you make today will determine how you end your life, how you finish. So if, for example, you decided right now, in the next 10 minutes, I'm going to decide and do something really powerful. I'm going to decide to be healthy. I'm going to work out 3 times a week. I'm not going to eat bad food, and I'm going to really focus on clearing my mind, and I'm going to commit to do that. That's a decision you made today. Once you commit and you implement, it will impact you for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So the decisions that we make today will determine how we end our life. The decisions we have made in the past do not have to go into the future. So if you constantly are aware of what the decisions you've made in the past, whether they serve you or not, will allow you to make decisions based on awareness and based on how you want to end life, how you want to live your life.
When you are meeting with people, do you get a lot of questions that, and again, I know that you're very respectful of the people that come up to you and ask you questions, but don't you tend to hear a lot of the same kind of, I'm going to put it under the category of whining about life? And do you find that until people can get out of that space about complaining and whining about their situation, their circumstances, that until they can shift and see the big picture, that there's not a whole lot that you can do for them?
Well, I can only help people who want to be helped. So if you need help from me, you have to be coachable, you have to be honest. And there are many, many people, I know I can help them, but they're not ready, they're not willing to change, because it does take effort to change, and change is uncomfortable, and people like to be comfortable. But it takes that inner strength for you to step up and say, I've had enough, I don't want to live like this, I want to step forward, I want to live my possibility, I want to live my greatness. But it takes effort, but you have to be ready.
There's a lot of discussion, in my circles anyway, about life being lived, and that there are two, some would even consider them diametrically opposed concepts at work, and that it's like, I'm curious as to how you view free will, and that also goes to the issue of choice that we talked about earlier, and, so to speak, predestination. There, you know, and some could even use the argument about, well, the choices of my past have formed my present, so I really didn't have any control. I mean, some might even look at it that way. But there are those who are looking at a bigger picture, a universal picture. They're looking at God or the supreme being or the universal power, the force, whatever you want to call it, as calling the shots for all of us, for each one of us. Now, each one of us has a different job. Each one of us has a different purpose in life, but they're all congruent. They all work together if we'll just let them. And so they will say, well, but then in that case, we don't really have any choice. We don't have any options. If we are living on purpose, if we're following our intuition, if we're listening to that still small voice and the prompting, what choice do we really have? You see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, yeah.
How do you balance those two concepts?
Well, you know,
or do you?
we have a blessing and a curse in the fact that we do have free will, And I firmly believe that we are in charge. We decide. And it's not what happens in life. It's who you become. You can have two twins. They can have exactly the same father, exactly the same circumstance, and they could easily end up in different places. And the reason we do that is because of how human beings work. For example, talking about the twins, if their father was abusive, and as human beings, this is very, very, very powerful. We are meaning-making machines. One twin could make it mean that, oh, it's my fault my father is like this. If I was more lovable, he wouldn't be like this. Whereas the other twin will say, wow, my father's like this. I don't want to be like this. I need to be a different person. What do I need to do? How can I become a better person? So it's not what happens in life. It's who you become. And as human beings, we need to know where we're going to. So, for example, if you wanted to fly to New York, what's the first question the airline will ask you? Where are you flying from? Because they need to know that. So if you want to get to somewhere, you need to know where you are first.
Mm-hmm.
And then you need to know where you want to get to so that you can go in that direction. And remember, if you're flying to New York, the plane is off target 95% of the time. So as human beings, this is the biggest problem we're facing at the moment. We're getting to wherever we're getting to because we have no goal. We have no destination. We have no drive. We don't have our mission and passion in place.
When we come back from our break, I'd like maybe for us to go through some of the steps. You talked about the three. And
that's correct.
Let's start with the first one, and we'll work our way through and elaborate a little bit more on each one of them as well. And just have a general conversation here about this process of inspiration and about taking control of one's life in that regard. So if you'll stay with us, my guest is Anil Gupta, and his website happens to be a very interesting website if you would like to go to it. It is AnilGuptaInspires.com. That's A-N as in Nancy, I-L. G-U-P-T-A, Inspires, I-N-S-P-I-R-E-S.com, and we encourage you to check it out as well. And we encourage you to stay with us. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we will be right back.
Tell me your stories, I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I'm with Anil Gupta, and he has a website, Anil Gupta Inspires. And give me the title of that book that's coming out soon.
Empower You, Empower Life.
Empower You, Empower Life. When I hear that title, all of a sudden my mind goes to our politicians. And I remember, I distinctly remember this back in the election cycle of 2000 here in this country. And Al Gore was running for office. And I remember one of his speeches, and boy, he was just telling us we can do, and we can do this, and we can do that. You have the power. You can do this. You can do that. And then a few days later, I heard another speech about what the government was going to do for us and in lieu of the entitlements. And I'm going, you just lost me. I'm done. First, you freed me. You released the chains, and then you put me back into a slavery mentality. And I want nothing to do with that. And I know that a lot of people are really working hard. I mean, they, you know, and it isn't really a question of, and this is sort of maybe the beautiful aspect of it, Anil. Not everybody wants the same things. Not everybody wants to be a millionaire.
Exactly.
There was a wonderful little story that somebody told, and I'm going to abbreviate it here. This gentleman, he and his friend were going out to breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And at each meal, at the end of the meal when the bill came, the gentleman, the first gentleman reached into his pocket and pulled out exact change plus gratuity and paid the bill. And after the third meal, his friend with him said, well, I don't get this. How is it that you always seem to have exactly the right amount of money to do this? And he says, well, I came across this genie who gave me one wish. And I could have wished for $1 million, but that would have been gone. I could have wished for this, that, and the other thing. And he says, I wish that I would have the means at my disposal whenever I needed it to buy the things that I needed. And that's how that came about. And a lot of us, we don't necessarily want 6, 7, 8, 9 digits in our bank account. We just don't want to be surviving anymore, living from paycheck to paycheck. We'd like to be able to thrive. And this is only partly due with money.
Yeah, and do you know why people want money?
They think that that's where the power is. That's where they think that's where the freedom is.
Well, everything that we do, Richard, everything that we do it for a feeling. So by having money in the bank, you feel secure. By having a nice house, you feel happy, secure, confident, powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have a great relationship with someone, you feel good. So everything that we do for a feeling. So imagine that you could generate that feeling without anything happening to you. That's where you get the juice in life, because you take control of life instead of life taking control of you.
Okay. Well, I think that's a real key for us to take a look at. Let's review those three steps again, and also let's go through them a bit, and maybe we'll converse on them a little bit more in detail.
Okay. So I only went through two of them. I will keep the third one to the end.
Ah, yes. Let's do that.
Everyone misses that one out.
Okay.
So give. Let's talk about giving. You know, there's great pleasure. As long as you give without attachment, meaning that if I give you $10 and then I want that $10 back, that's not a gift.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if I just gave you $10 and just enjoy giving you $10, that's a gift. If I give you my time, if I go and feed the homeless, or if I help an old lady across the street, it's a gift. If I open the door for someone, it's a gift to someone, and I'm not expecting anything in return. That's the beauty of giving, if you don't expect anything in return and you have no attachment. And as human beings, we love giving. We absolutely love giving.
Now, my understanding, too, is that there is a universal principle involved here, and that is that in order for there to be a giver, there must be a receiver, and vice versa. You can't have one without the other. And so let's say you talk about giving, but what if I'm on the other end of that? And I know a lot of people who they have a hard time receiving.
Okay. That will come in the second part.
Okay.
Grow. That you have to grow. I used to hate receiving. Because of our human nature, I used to think I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough. You know, I don't deserve this. You know, why are they giving to me? I'm the giver. But it once you learn to grow, once you learn to accept and to receive, it does fill you.
Mm-hmm. So, the giving is literally the giving of, you know, whatever it is that you have at your disposal, and you give it freely, you give it willingly, and it's just one of those things that that we just have to learn. In terms of that, is there a process by which we have to learn how to give in that sense? I mean, I have a pile of clothes that don't fit me anymore, but they've just been sitting there. I haven't given them to anyone,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not wearing them either.
Okay.
But that's not doing anybody else any good.
Okay. So what's stopping you giving them?
I think it's primarily putting them in the car and taking them down the hill to the proper site so that they can be used.
Okay, but if you imagine that there are people who would be desperate for that type of donation, and you're denying them that donation by every day you delay.
Mm-hmm. So now, and this is kind of strange. This is a little bit of a dichotomy here. What, as the giver, what is it that I receive? I mean, it's the natural, universal part of giving, But what is it that the giver receives, even when the giver gives with no expectation?
A feeling. He gets a feeling. He gets a beautiful, fulfilling inner peace and joy that cannot be matched.
Mm.
And, you know, something happened to me the other day. Someone paid for a meal, and I said, no, at least let me pay half. He said, no. And he said something very powerful to me. He says, are you denying me the pleasure of buying this meal?
Interesting.
I thought, wow. Then I succumbed and I surrendered and I said, thank you. And I felt the great love there.
Hmm. That's very interesting. I just want to let our listeners know that who we're talking with, and his name is Anil Gupta, and he has a website, Anil Gupta Inspires, and we are linked to his website as well. And this is interesting how we go through a process, Anil, as we grow. In many families, in many households, you know, we're taught about the process of giving, that it's more blessed to give than to receive. And I mean, a lot of little catchphrases that we learn as we grow. But I'm wondering if one day it might just be a natural part of our daily lives, just like breathing. We don't even think about it; we just do it.
But we already do that as children.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do. We just give our love. We give our energy, we give our vitality. Then as we grow older, that's taken away from us. Then we become fearful that, you know, if I give, what do I get back? If I give, you know, will people take advantage of me? And if you look at a child, it's pure love. It will give, 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 and give. It is our natural tendency to give.
Okay.
And it is our natural tendency to receive.
You talk about receiving this feeling. When we receive this feeling, you know, because a lot of folks struggle with their own emotions, with their own feelings. And maybe I should ask you to maybe differentiate, if there is a difference, between this feeling that one would get from giving versus our various emotional states.
That the feeling is self-generated, so, and it's pure. So it's very healing, it's very clean, it's very filling, and it's just joyous.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just pure. That's the only way I can describe it. As long as you do it without attachment and without wanting anything in return. And just look at the way you are with Angus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he'll poop all over the place, and you'll forgive him.
Yeah.
Yeah? Because that's pure love.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, say, oh, my God, he pooped. Oh, my God. But if Angus did that in 4 years' time, it's a different meaning you put behind it.
Yeah. Well, and I have to say, too, that using that as the example, that I have I took the mental attitude, if you will, that those kinds of things are going to happen. Now, some would say, well, then you set it up to happen. I say, no. That in this case, for example, this puppy of 12, 13 weeks of age, who is growing, it's just that's just what happens. You know, it's just like the leaves falling off the tree in the fall. It's just what happens. How can you get angry with, in this case, an animal who is secured in a large area for his protection as well as others, who doesn't have the opportunity to go outside in the yard? What else do you expect him to do? And we've made you know, precautions, certain things to do in that regard. But the bottom line is that I went into this knowing that's just what's going to happen. And there's no absolutely no reason for me to get angry. But then you say, all right, 4 years down the road, now he's an adult. Well, I have to say that I would probably still take the same tack, but from a slightly different perspective, saying, okay, why? Why did he do this?
Mm-hmm.
Animals don't do things for malicious reasons. I've learned that, especially living up on the hill. Even when, back in December of 2012, we lost our entire flock of chickens to a predator. I mean, we're talking overnight. The entire flock was wiped out, and our peahen was also killed by some kind of predator. Now, that wasn't malicious. It wasn't vengeful. There was no revenge involved. It was just an animal acting out its normal natural instincts in terms of probably looking for something to eat, and so on and so forth. And I was saddened by the loss, absolutely. But what am I, you know, but I guess I look at things a little differently from that standpoint, that there are certain events that happen in one's life that that's just the way life is. That's just what happens.
Well, you have very powerful there. What you, as human beings, by changing the definition we have for different circumstances, we change our lives. So if you have a definition for love, and I ask this in my seminars, what does love mean to you? And they say, oh, it's a special spot in my heart, and it's a feeling, and I do this, and I do that. You know, and I say, well, a lot of things have to happen for you to feel love. They say, well, yes. I say, what would happen if you changed the definition of love to this? Love is acceptance. What would happen to you? So, well, you know, oh, it can't be that simple. But that's what you're demonstrating. You're accepting that predator as they are. You're accepting Angus as he is. And that's the definition of love.
Mm.
You don't have rules saying, oh, I'll only love you if you do this, this, or that.
Right.
So if you accept if people as they are without judgment, it gives you great power and gives you great peace. You don't have to agree with what happens, but if you accept, you know, that's the way it is.
Right.
How can I move forward?
Exactly. You know, and that spurs a thought in my mind about some of the interesting television programs. I don't know how much television you watch, but I see the previews for some of these, the promotional announcements for some of these programs that are dealing with the exact opposite, the lack of acceptance. I mean, there's a program called Revenge. And I think there's another one. I think it's Black Widow or something like that. And,
oh, dear.
And so on and so forth. And these are all about getting even with other people who have done you or your family or your spouse or your husband, your father, your siblings. They've done you wrong. Now, I certainly can understand going through the judicial process and of course, law enforcement initially, then judicial process, and hopefully bringing it to a peaceful end. But these kinds of programs actually just teach the opposite, that when somebody does you wrong, you have got to go out and what is it? What's the phrase? Get your pound of flesh, if you will.
Yeah. No, my entire seminar is based on awareness, and it culminates in a forgiveness exercise. I call forgiveness is the express pathway to freedom. The quality of your life is dependent on the quality of the forgiveness you're able to have in your life.
Mm.
And it'll kill you. It'll eat you up. It'll destroy your life. And you're giving so much power to the people who've done something to you.
And that was something that I learned a long time ago. And it's epitomized in a phrase that was told to me. And that is, you know, pick your battles very carefully. There have been situations that both my present wife and I have been involved in where, you know, we have thought about suing. But is this something that we want to have dragging on for the next 5 or 10 years?
No.
It's like, do I really want to waste my energy going in that direction? I'll give you a case in point. When my first wife and I were given the opportunity to buy a house in Phoenix, Arizona. It was a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. It was a nice house, $43,000, if you can believe that. And that was in 1993, my friend. and it was a nice house, and it's still standing today. But and we closed from the day we saw it. We closed in 30 days. And I think the reason we did that was because from the very beginning, I said that we had to maintain a mindset. And the only mindset that we would maintain is this. We are buying a house, period. We are buying a house. It didn't matter what the appraisers said. It didn't matter what the loan officers or the title company or, matter of fact, the day of closing, I get a call from the realtor who had picked up the papers to take them over to the title company saying, hey, you don't have any homeowners insurance. And I said, well, no. I contacted this company and they were supposed to do this, da-da-da-da-da. And I'm thinking, my gosh, this deal is going to fall through. And I had to stop myself and say, no. Uh-uh. We're buying a house. We're not dealing with insurance. We are buying a house.
Mm-hmm.
That issue will be taken care of. We are, just over and over again. By 2 o'clock that afternoon, we bought the house. We closed on it. And certainly the process, the details were slightly different than the way we had mapped them out from the first day, but it didn't matter. It was still okay. And I think that's what happens to us a lot of time, isn't it? Is that we get distracted.
We do. We lose focus. And do you know the reason why people sue each other? Why do you have contentious divorces?
Well, I would answer with the same one that I you gave the last time, and that is for a feeling.
Well, it's something more powerful.
Okay.
No, I mean, not more powerful, but it's powerful.
Right.
The reason we do things as human beings is we love to be right.
Mm.
And especially me, I love to be right about being right because I have all this beautiful technology that I can implement. but it is. You know, and we'll stick to having an argument with someone. We'll forget what we're fighting about, but we just want to be right.
Yeah.
And if you have that awareness, why am I doing this? Oh, okay. What would happen if I let go? Well, they would win. But no, it's not that they would win. It's that you get peace. So from that awareness, you get that clarity, and then you can make informed decisions. It's okay.
There's a commercial for electric companies here in California that talks about how this kid is asked by an adult, hey, Tommy, would you like to go to the park, to the amusement park and play this and play that and do this and that and the other thing? Oh, yeah, it'd be great. Let's go. And you can't. Well, why not? Well, because you left that light on, or you left the radio on, or the turntable, or the television, or whatever it is that you left on, and you spent that money on that electricity. Well, what you're talking about, Anil, is the same thing. Where do you want to, so to speak, spend your energy? Do you want to spend it on that, getting even, being right, or on living your purpose?
Yeah. And, you know, there's a cost. I call it a cost. You lose your energy, your vitality, your happiness, your joy, your peace of mind. But we will sacrifice all those things just to be right.
Yeah.
And once you know that that's one of the human beings, that's what human beings go through, you can let that go.
Let me ask you, if you will, to talk to us about number two. And I mean, we've sort of alluded to that, a lot of different elements. The second step is growth, is to grow.
Uh-huh. So let's talk about mental growth.
You know, okay.
Be aware of your thoughts. You are your thoughts. Observe your thoughts. Don't let them run your life. Just observe them and see what impact it has on your life. What do you think about all of the time? Do you think, oh, the economy is bad, the economy is bad, the economy is bad? Because if you start thinking about that, it becomes reality. You know, this economy does produce the most amount of millionaires that any other time in history. If you lived like that, your thoughts would be, oh, my God, there's so many opportunities here. Let me find one. It's a totally different meaning you're putting behind to the same circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the mental growth. The spiritual growth is pretty obvious, you know, just grow in the spiritual side of you. The physical side, start eating healthy, do some exercise, get get into motion. Build your body up, because that is the most important part of you. It's more important than wealth, because I see a lot of people who get very wealthy, then they use all their wealth to try and get back their health. And it's so sad to see.
Mm.
Yeah. Your health is your wealth.
The age of 15, the thought ran through my mind, because of everything that I'd been taught in school, specifically regarding health and food and what your body does with all of this food in terms of converting it into energy and so forth, that if I start today at age 15 to really be careful about what I put into my body, then, you know, I may be doing pretty well. Well, I did fairly well. You know, I am by no means overweight. I probably could lose maybe 10, 15 pounds, and it kind of comes and goes. I know that my arch nemesis when it comes to food is soft drinks, and I know that I need to stay away from them. They don't help me in any way, shape, or form. They may taste good at the moment, but down the road, they do a lot more damage than good, and I've experienced that. And it's the same thing with, of course, the foods and so on and so forth. And I've never locked into just one thing. I know a lot of people, I don't know about you, but people who work 9 to 5 and they work at the same job for, I don't know, 5, 10, 15 years, and they'll eat the same thing day in and day out over and over and over again, right? And there's no variance. And I remember here on the Central Coast in Santa Barbara, you know, of course, there's the big deal about farmers markets and so forth. And you eat the crops, you eat the fruits and vegetables that are available, that are in season. And I thought, gee, isn't that interesting how nature kind of set that up? Where we as humans, we might live in a particular area, but there's no way that we can eat the same things year-round, because if we were to, say, have our own garden and we change the garden out during the seasons, during the year, then we're going to have different foods throughout the 12 months and so forth.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about that.
Yeah. Well, you said something very powerful. See, people think knowledge is power, but it's not. You know, knowledge is not power unless you implement. So I need to lose 10, 12 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
I know how to do it, but I just don't do it.
Oh, let's go running together.
So, look, why don't we make a commitment over the wires?
All right.
I will lose 10 pounds in 2 months from today.
Okay.
And the reason is because I'm a fraud. You know, I'm coaching people on how to become better human beings and how to be happier and fulfilled. But I'm inauthentic. I'm inauthentic about stuff in my life. So being present to that inauthenticity will allow me to step up. And if I commit publicly, then I have to perform.
I think that that's something that we find very hard to do. In my case, I remember, and I'm going to do something along the same lines as you, commit to losing... actually 15 pounds, but I'm going to give it 3 months. Matter of fact, okay. I'm going to give it until my birthday, which is the 26th of June of this year.
Okay.
Now, when I went in, for example, I had knee surgery back in December on the 21st, which was also my 10-year wedding anniversary. And it was also the summer winter solstice. It was also the end of the Mayan calendar. So a lot going on that day. When I went in 2 months earlier for the initial consult, they weighed me. I was 194 pounds, and I have no problems saying that. When I went in for the surgery, having gone through the past 2 months with a lot of pain and so forth, I was 179.
Wow.
It is now March, April, what have you, of 2013, and I am now back to 194. Now, I know why and how I lost the weight back in the fall and winter. It was because of the struggles that I had with the pain I was having with the knee. When the pain was gone, even though I was still getting out, and I love to walk, Anil. I love getting out. We have a street here called State Street. It's our main street. And it's just great fun. I love to get out and walk and enjoy the sea breezes and all of that. And I wasn't really able to do that back then, in spite of the fact that I lost 15 pounds. And now I'm out walking, and it's like, wait a minute. Well, I know the culprit, and that it goes back to my arch nemesis, soft drinks. So between now and my 53rd birthday, I am going to commit to losing those 15 pounds, get back down to around 180. I was 175 when I met my second wife.
Nice.
You know, and that was 15 years ago.
So Richard, do you drive a car?
I do. I used to bicycle everywhere, too.
Okay. Does it take gas or diesel?
It's gas.
Okay. Would you ever put diesel in it?
I never even thought about putting diesel into a gasoline car. I know you do not want to put gasoline into a diesel car.
But you wouldn't think of doing it, would you?
No.
Yeah, you'd always put good gas.
Oh, I see where you go. Okay. No, I would not put diesel in my gasoline engine.
So if you look at the soft drinks that you drink, mm-hmm. imagine that's diesel and you're a petrol engine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what I need to do every time I want to go in and get something like that, I need to grab a bottle of water at the very least.
Yeah. Water is incredibly healthy for you because it'll remove toxins. You'll live longer. You'll live healthier. You'll become stronger. The body relies on oxygen and water and alkalinity too.
Anil, can you tell us a little bit about some of these workshops and seminars that you conduct? Tell us about your experiences, especially the first one that you gave, because you talked about, you know, having all these great ideas and people saying, hey, you ought to go move forward and so forth. Tell us about that first experience.
Right. I remember I was with Tony Robbins, and we were on a plane in Miami, and he said, Anil, you know, what are your plans for the future? I said, well, Tony, I want to provide water wells for all the poor people in the world. He said, well, that's a big project. I said, yes, it is. And, you know, there was a little bit of significance there. I wanted to try and impress him. But he said, Anil, why don't you do coaching and why don't you do seminars? I've seen the work that you do, and you've had amazing results. But I wasn't ready. And the great thing is, you know, as human beings, and as parents, brothers, sisters, friends, we see greatness in other people that they don't see that in themselves. So he saw greatness in me. And nothing happened for a few years. Then a friend said, look, Anil, why don't you do some seminars? I said, look, I would absolutely love to, but I'm scared. He said, what are you scared of? I said, look, if no one turns up, it's going to be really embarrassing. And he said something really powerful to me. He said, look, Anil, if no one turns up, no one will know. And that resonated with me. I said, yeah, I can do that. So we started off, we had like 6 people. Then I did another one. And then, you know, we had 30, 40. And the most recent one was last weekend. We had 75 people. And it's the most beautiful, most fulfilling, most joyous atmosphere there when people's lives are transformed. All the pain and suffering they've been going through disappears. It just goes out the window, and they just can't believe how easy it is. But it is easy. All you have to do is raise your awareness. Go through the methodologies, and the methodologies are in the book. I teach you like 30 different techniques. If you apply them in your life, they're immediately beneficial. They have immediate results. I had a young man wouldn't speak to his father. And I started asking him some questions. I said, well, you know, what did your father do to you? Well, he made me go to boarding school. Oh, really? Okay. So what do you do now? I said, I'm a journalist. And I said, are you a successful journalist? He says, actually, I am. And I said, well, who paid for your education? He said, oh, my father did. Then you could feel the thought that was in his head. Oh, my God. My father did that for me, so that I could become something. He'd had this hatred for his father. Oh, he made me go to school. He'd made me do this. The father loved him so much that he was willing to lose the love of his son so that his son could have something he didn't have. And just by going through with this young man, he realized that. And you could see his face, his whole demeanor change. He became younger and more joyous. And he had love for his parents back. You have to love your parents, no matter what they did to you. They gave you life. You don't have to have a relationship with them, but you have to be grateful to them. And that's the third part of the fulfillment, is you have to be grateful.
My guest is Anil Gupta, and his website is Anil Gupta Inspires. And one question I have for you that I think a lot of people might be interested in, too. I had a gentleman in studio several years ago, and he was across the console from me. And we were sharing the same kinds of things in terms of, you know, inspiring people, and his inspirational phrases were printed on all kinds of different things. And I said to him, well, I'm going to say it to you, that I'm sure you have inspired hundreds, if not thousands upon thousands of people. Who inspires you?
Yeah, I tell you who my inspiration is. It's my wife. I'm going to get tearful now. About 4 years ago, I lost everything. My money, my children's college fund, everything, and I was on the verge of suicide. I didn't know what to do. She said to me, "Honey, I'm glad you lost it." Oh. I said, "Why would you say that?" And she said, "Look, you can't sleep at night. I don't know if you're going to come back home whenever you leave the house. You're a wreck. You're not happy. You're miserable. You don't look at us. You don't talk to us. Now you don't have to worry about that stuff." And she says, "Look, I love you for who you are. Even if we have to sleep in the street, I'll do it. I don't care about the money. I just want you back." Oh my gosh. It gave me, I tell you, it's the most filling thing I've ever experienced. You know, that was total love, accepting me as I am, loving me for who I am. That's pure, so pure. She has this inside of her that I never had, and it inspired me. And then she said, "Look, do what you love to do." And I said, "Well, I love to coach." She said, "Well, do it then. It's okay. Do what you love. Everything will fall in place."
And I take it has.
It has. I used to worship the U.S. dollar. And then when I lost everything, I started worshipping a different type of denomination. I became an instant billionaire. I tell you what my new currency is. It's the currency of friendship, of love, of camaraderie, of making a difference, of being alive, being grateful. That's my new currency. Hmm. I can never, ever, ever be poor.
Extraordinary. I have to say that there are no accidents. The gentleman that I spoke with several years ago and asked that very question, and I kid you not, Anil, he actually had the same reaction. And I remember thinking as I'm sitting, and we were live on the air, and I thought, my God, I made my guest cry. That's not what this show is about, making your guest cry. That was in a good way. It was in a good way. But I can't help but feel the same kinds of things that you do in terms of what your wife said, for example. That I don't want to care about those other things. They're not important. It's really interesting how, you know, I was actually going to say that your wife is an integral part of, but it's she's not just a part. She's integrated into you and you to her and your family and the people that you associate with. That in a conversation I had with my father some time ago, I was sharing with him how if someone came up to me and said, "Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago?" You know, the whole political thing. my response would be, well, I either am or I am not, but it had nothing to do with you. I did it myself. And what I mean by that is that it was my choices. It was the people I surrounded myself with. It was the situations that I chose to put myself into that made it better or worse. Not anything that you did on the outside. And I think that's where we are kind of, we're heading in that direction as a people. I think we're beginning to realize that. That's why when I said, when I used that example of Al Gore's speech 13 years ago, on the one hand, oh, look at what we can do. You can do this and you can do that. And then turning it around saying, and here's what the government's going to do for you. I said, forget it. I want no part of it. Because it's not up to the government. It's up to me. It's not up to the institutions. It's entirely up to me. It's entirely up to you. And there is a third pillar, if you will, or a third step that you are going to share with us.
That is the final one, and that's be grateful. If you have gratitude, you have growth, and you give the three G's, you will be filled. And there's no money involved. There's no things involved. It's just who you're being, how you show up in life. And gratitude is so, so, so simple. I remember coaching one client, and I said, write down 50 things you can be grateful for. She said, I can't. Well, one thing. She says, no. I said, look, do you have your eyes? Do you have your teeth? Do you have your hands? Do you have breath? Do you have freedom? Do you have hair? Do you have somewhere to live? Do you have clothes? Oh, that sort of stuff. It's not the size of the gratitude. It's the quality of the gratitude.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, too, in that process of being grateful, you're just grateful. You're not grateful in spite of anything. It's just,
absolutely,
you're just grateful.
Yeah.
And I think it's quite extraordinary. I have, before we wrap up the program, three final questions for you. Who is Anil Gupta?
I am a man who's dedicated to serving humanity. I touch, move, and inspire people in any way that I can. That's who I am.
And though you've probably answered this rather eloquently throughout the program today, I'll ask it anyway. And what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing?
I want everyone to become aware of the greatness inside them. One of the questions I ask in my seminars is, what's your greatness? I don't ask, do you have any greatness? What's your greatness? So please, write this question down. What's your greatness? What are you great at? What do you love to do? I promise you, once you start asking better quality questions, you'll get better quality answers. Mm. What's your greatness?
And how powerful are we as human beings?
We have immense power. We just do not know how to action it or get access to it. But the power is within. The gold is within. The treasure is within. We have minds. We have purity. We have honesty. We have forgiveness. We have love. They're the most powerful resources, and everything we have is within us.
Giving, growth, and gratitude, the three steps that you've been sharing with us today. And I want to thank you very much for being on the program today and sharing your story and the information that you have with our audience.
No, it's my pleasure entirely. Thank you, Richard.
Anil Gupta inspires. We will be linked to his website. You can go to richarddugan.com and listen to this interview, as well as go to his website. And again, that the title of that book again once is...
Empower You, Empower Life.
Empower You, Empower Life. And what the projected release date?
It's middle of April.
Middle of April. All right. We'll look forward to that. Again, thank you so much for joining us. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next Saturday at this same time, love to Lal.